extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow. From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr, Matt Doyle. I'm gone for a week. I almost forgot. I almost spaced the intro I say twice a week for like the past 10 years. What's up, guys? 32 weeks down. Just a couple more to go. Decision day, playoffs, World Cup. Going to be a nice, easy end to 2022. Going to really take a load off. Chill out. Do nothing. How you guys feeling? Do you want to hear about the Rainbow Narwhals and Cameron Wiebe's first soccer game, or should I just save that
I don't think we have a choice with that one. I think we're definitely going to hear about the Rainbow Narwhals.
Oh, we are. Big day for the Wiebe family. Yes, Anders, narwhals. Yes, the whale with a sharp, pointy horn on the front. The unicorn.
Wiebe does not realize that was a meme about 10 years ago, but anyway.
I don't. Yeah. I'm missing that. Anders is much more in tune with internet culture than I am, clearly. Cameron Wiebe, bless his heart, has refused to participate in any all organized soccer events until this weekend. And we got him on the field. We got two goals. We hit some posts. We had a goal line clearance. I know results don't matter for the pre-K crowd. You know, the four and unders, but, you know, look, the Rainbow Narwhals got a 4-3 win. Feeling great about my coaching debut as well. Coach Andrew, let's go.
And wait, what's your attire? I want to know, what is your attire like as a coach?
Oh, that's a good question.
Like, I went with up, the,
no, no, I didn't go. You know, it's very hot out there. 12:30 in Kansas City in September is pretty, it's impressive, to be honest with you. The kids took mini water breaks and snack breaks. Went with the LBF, Live, Breathe Football shorts. And then we had the 2022 MLS All-Star Game jersey, just to let everybody know that I'm on the inside here.
You wore MLS a jersey. Employee. You wore a jersey to the game.
It was hot. It was hot. I was wearing a t-shirt. My wife made fun of it in the car. I pulled back into the driveway and went and got the jersey on. It was a game time decision. I understand that not all will agree with that. I didn't go full kit with this.
Sounds like the Wiebes went 500 yesterday. One for the Narwhals and not one.
It was a good day, though. It's a really good day. Pantheon Dad Day. So if you've got good youth soccer team names, stories, coaching experiences, we may not read them on the show because I don't want to get roasted every single show, but I will appreciate them in the email and or on Twitter. We got a big show coming up today. The AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. We're running through week 32. A lot to talk about. Obviously, the playoff races are getting down to sort of money time. Either you're out or you're in. Some teams know for sure after this weekend that they're out. Some teams are still holding on. Some teams are in. Of course, the Supporters Shield up for grabs between LAFC and Philadelphia. Philadelphia with a tough one on the road in Atlanta. Maybe put them behind the eight ball against LAFC, who won against Houston. We're going to go through the best thing we saw, of course, as we always do. Go through all these games, and we will talk about an incident down at DC as well that has made headlines and is concerning, I think, for all of us. But let's jump into it now with the best thing we saw. Kalen, start us off. What's the best thing you saw in MLS Week 32?
There were some good ones. This was good this week. But I'm going to go with Dax McCarty getting his – he is now tied with Jeff Laurentiewicz for third all-time in MLS as far as appearances go. So shout-out to Jeff. Shout-out to Dax. I believe that is – the number I had written down, it was like 437, I believe. Something crazy high.
Yeah, 437 is what you've got written down here. Okay. I didn't
look at the notes. I wrote it down and I don't look at the notes.
Whether that's right or not, the TBD, wow. But we see right here on the rundown. Yes.
Okay, I got to pull that up. Sorry.
Yeah. Hey, I did whether it is or not. Yeah. They're tied, man. Third all time in Mutant Jeans.
That just says something about how I approach this.
It feels like more than 400 for sure.
Wait, Dax.
Who are the top two? Is it Raimondo and Marshall?
It's gonna be Beckerman, no?
Or Beckerman rather? Yeah. Raimondo and Beckerman have got to be the top two. Unless are you limiting it to just field players, Kalen? What did your research point you towards?
Listen, I saw this on like Instagram or Twitter or something like that. There was no research involved. I just saw Dax hit third, tied for third with Jeff, and that's it. Okay. So, we were drafted the same year, Dax and I too. So it's like amazing to see his longevity of just continuing to go and go and go and go. And so, hype for him. And, what a pro. Incredible career.
When you see that number, could be 437, could be a different one. As someone who has actual experience racking up these appearances, what does that say to you?
Is that
your body didn't break down, or wow, you know, people continue to want to sign you? Like,
well, we were drafted the same year, but I remember how young Dax was at the time and how young he looked too, even back then. And I definitely looked young too, but I was older. So I think that's a part of it that I look back on. And then also, his longevity as far as like avoiding injuries, taking care of himself, the amount of miles when I think of that you put on as far as like how much he's put into it. Growing the league and into his career has been incredible. So, I think a lot about that. I think a little bit about some of the bonuses, you know, that he may have hit over time. I hope there's some sort of bonus for hitting. Like that would be, if you started off your career in 06 and he was like, if I get to 437, what will you give me? Yeah, I think that would have been.
He should get it written into his contract that if he hits 500, he gets an Audi.
At least just for a ride, like a nice a car would be good, I feel like, for all the mileage he's put on, or maybe some tires. I don't know, there's a lot of different ways you could take it.
There was a day that extra time folks could get some tires as well. I just looked it up here. This is appearance by field players only. Beckerman is number one at 490, and then it's Horonowitz at 423, so he's just moved into a tie there. So I guess they would be tied for second on that. And then you have goalkeepers, which are a whole different breed entirely. I don't have that list in front of me, but Dax there, the top five here, Drew Moore, Brad Davis, Chad Marshall, Steve Ralston in this conversation as well. But I believe among field players, you're now looking at four with more than 400, and that's Marshall, Horonowitz, and Beckerman, as well as Dax McCarty.
Steve Ralston should still be getting minutes, by the way. Steve Ralston, he could still do it.
Probably got the fitness to do it. Dave, what's the best thing you saw in week 32?
On field, we have to celebrate all excellent players in MLS. We talk goal scorers all the time. Andre Blake, incredible performance, but specifically the quadruple save. Because I think even if they want to admit it, right, every goalkeeper they're working on, you get down, how quickly can you get up? I think most keepers, after they had been passed, would have given up on that play. He crawls back in, takes it off the foot of Dom Dwyer after the Glesnes block. He's been arguably an MVP candidate this year for Supporters Shield contending, potentially winning team. I think Kalen said it best last year of like, when we look at teams going into the playoffs, you always talk the star players that can win games for you. You always talk attackers, pre-Gazdag being the greatest player in MLS history, and Mikel Ura and Julian Carranza being on this team. We didn't feel Philly had one, but that Andre Blake is one because of how special, how good he is. And so just to continue to see it. And then for him to get to do that on national TV, he's got the controversy going on with the national team as well, I think was just a cool moment for him.
Should he be an MVP candidate? I've sort of scoffed at this, and not out of like disrespect at all to Andre Blake, but more in like a political sense of like, I don't think he would be in the running because, as you said, conventional wisdom and the way people vote, it's just attackers get those votes. They get the headlines. They get finalist status among MVPs. Should he be an MVP candidate? Should we start that campaign? I don't know if we have any power. Sometimes it feels like we can sway these things. Should we try? What do you think?
I still have Jack Elliott as the MVP for Philadelphia, but it's like a razor thin margin between him, Jose Martinez. Sorry, I have Jack Elliott as Defender of the Year. I have Jose Martinez as team MVP. I have Blake is probably going to win Goalkeeper of the Year now, though I still think Georgi Petrovic has a great argument. Gazdag's going to go for 20-10. Ale Bedoya, if you ask internally, might actually be the MVP. Kai Wagner set the record for assists by a defender this year. Glesnes might actually be the Defender of the Year, not Elliott. It's impossible with this Union team to say one guy. So like Andre Blake's not the wrong answer if you want to vote for him for MVP of the league, not just of the team. But like, I don't think you can say that it's clear about any of them.
All right, so let's make him defender of the year. Because, I mean, no offense to Georgi Petrovic. Like,
goalkeeper of the year, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You can I actually thought you were trying to make a statement by saying
He just confused me. There were so many different possible of the years in there that I got very confused. Let's go for it. It's Andre Blake's. I'm sorry, Georgi Petrovic has been amazing. The XG minus gold, whatever the stat is, has been out of this world. But the Revs have been putrid, and like, you just can't. You got to honor the teams that did it and the players that contributed to it. So we're putting your flag in the ground right now. Andre Blake is the extra time goalkeeper of the year. Does anyone dissent?
Look how controversial we are.
No, it might be my best goalkeeper on the best team. But going back to my point, I guess from last year that I'd forgotten about from Goss is we didn't get a chance.
I got you, Kalen.
I appreciate that. You. Yeah, respect. He might be an odds-on favorite for an MLS Cup MVP though, right? Where we saw that with Sean Johnson picking That's it up right. last year. And I think if you think of the way that we talked about and going back to that of this idea of like a match winner, I mean, you just saw this weekend, even as far as winning those right. points or keeping that point, like under pressure to make those big saves in those big moments. And I think they have a lot more to give on the other side as well. But, you know, he really is a whole different type of player than anybody else. So I think especially as the matches get further in the playoffs, it gets a little bit tighter. I could see him stepping up and being winning MLS Cup potentially for this team.
I will never forget being at the Union draft table when John Hackworth made the decision to take Andre Blake, and that decision coming under fire internally from folks within the club because they had Rice and Boley, I believe, at the time. Why did we make this decision? Now, with the benefit of hindsight is 2020. Hindsight is 2020. There is an article out there with like a blow-by-blow that entire day. You can go check it out. I was a fly on the wall at the draft table. That turned out to be a pretty darn good decision. So that worked out decently for the Philadelphia Union. Doyle, best thing you saw in week 32.
I'm going to call an audible and take two best things I saw. One, Karol Swiderski had a brace this weekend, and he's been really, really good. 10 goals, 5 assists as he's the best finisher and the best playmaker on that team. Christian Latanzio has actually dropped him off the front line into midfield a little bit with this weirdo formation that Charlotte's playing. And I just like,
but who would think he's not good, Doyle? Like who would?
Anders would think he's not good. Anders has been absolutely ripping this poor guy in the chat all year long because Anders is like, he only looks at the stats. He doesn't watch the games. That's just his MO. But like I've really enjoyed watching Charlotte under Latanzio, even though they don't have a ton of high level players. Like Christian Latanzio has been a problem solver for them in terms of how he sets them up. He's getting more out of guys like Brant Bronico and Derek Jones. Remember when Derek Jones was Tyler Adams' midfield partner for that great US U20 team back in 2017? Jones was legitimately awesome in that tournament, and nobody's been able to figure out how to use him in MLS. Well, Latanzio plugged him in as a D-mid 5-6 games ago. I think Charlotte's 3-0-3 in that six. Like it's been fun to watch as the season goes along, instead of fading as you would expect from a team that frankly is not super talented and have had their share of issues in terms of coaching and structure. They have a DP in Juzviak who can't even get off the bench. Latanzio's figured it out, kept them in it, kept them engaged, kept them winning games like the one they won this week, 3-2, come from behind after going down 2-0 at Chicago. So like that was a great thing to see, especially because Latanzio apparently blew a kiss to the fire crowd as they were walking away, which I love. But the other thing I have to say, Corey Baird's resting Stamford face after scoring that incredible goal last night for Houston, another team that we're not really going to talk a lot about, but like, that ball from Karaskia, that run and finish, the run, touch, and finish from Baird. And then he doesn't celebrate against an LAFC team. He was on that roster for about 14 minutes. And he's like ostentatiously not celebrating while he's just got the most smug, I went to Stanford look on his face. Like that just like that tickled me to the depths of my being. I enjoyed everything about that.
Doyle, you baited me into this, into liking that tweet as well. You were like, Kalen is 100% going to like the Stanford smug face thing, which I actually think, I don't know if it's Corey's dad, but I think he just liked that post as well, which I got to give some respect
to. Somebody with the last name of Baird. I had to resist seeing Bobby Warshaw in on that as well. That was an incredible goal. Coco Carrasquilla, that's a guy you can build around, I think, if you're Houston. Best thing I saw in week 32, Nick Cushing, who's had a tough go of it with NYCFC. Results have not been there. They had some reports of some contentious moments, let's say, with local media, who were questioning what's going on. Well, you win a derby game at Yankee Stadium. You make a trip under the 456 and you pound some beers under an ATM sign in the Bronx. That's the way you do it. Do you know where he was, Dave? I mean,
obviously, dugouts, great back space for you to hang out in. It's controversial maybe to be dugout over stands. Stands, good outdoor space, but you know, that's my NYCFC pre and post. So I respect Nick Cushing for his decision. I also sat in a room with Kalen last week where he read a children's story and he committed fully to the sound effects. So we
Nick Cushing did.
Yeah, I think he might be all in.
He might be my favorite MLS head coach for, I mean, if it lasts. By far now. big guy for the sound effects and the kids' story. The other one I was going to do is FC Dallas dunking on us after they drew San Jose. Which I was like, yeah, you know, like you made the playoffs, you got the X, but you also just drew San Jose. And that brings us to a point of saying, like, do we want to get out in front of any bad predictions? You know, like FC Cincinnati is coming for us. I'm just going to put it out there. I think every single MLSsoccer.com, I'll just throw out the air quotes, pundit picked them in the teens, and they're not going to finish in the teens. They still got to make the playoffs before I think they're going to hang on the rim.
I picked them 12th.
But that's coming. 12th. Yeah, that's coming. They're going to hang on the rim on us. I'm going to say apologies to Montreal, who I picked to miss the playoffs.
I'm also going to apologize to Montreal for not having the courage of my convictions. On the first draft of our preseason predictions, I had them third in the East. They're going to finish second, but I was high on them. I had them third in the East. And then David Goss talked me out of that. David Goss, I remember.
How did you get out of here? End up with me.
What's the documentation here?
David Goss talked me out of that and talked me into moving Montreal down to fifth. So I apologize to Wilfred Nancy, who's probably going to get my vote for Coach of the Year, and for the entire CF Montreal franchise for not sticking to my guns, for not having the courage of my convictions and keeping them top three. If you have any issues with that, please abuse David Goss on social media.
I'm looking at my preseason predictions that I wrote down right here, and I'm just stumbling over Defender of the Year Kamal Miller, Assist King leader Georgi Mihailovic, to come around and say, Doyle, it sounds like a personal problem.
I think you also had Mason Toy in the draft, too, didn't you?
Yeah, you, I mean,
of course, you were Mason Toy in the draft.
He was so deep. Yeah, he was so deep. He was going Toy. Which
no, what this sounds like
his team on that in a little bit.
What this sounds like is that David wanted to be known as the Montreal guy, right? Like he wanted to claim that.
Threw you off the scent.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he wanted to claim all that glory for himself. I get it. We all get it, David. We know how you operate.
Yeah.
A moment of strength for David and a moment of weakness for you is how I'm reading.
For sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
No doubt. Dave, what do you got here? Because you got one. You might want to get out ahead of this.
Yeah. So I question whether or not this LAFC team is good enough to contend for a playoff spot. I picked them eighth preseason. I think my point at the time was they didn't make the playoffs last year. And I think Bob Bradley tactically is the best American coach in the world. I don't know if that's how you have to describe that. So I didn't see them taking a step forward. Now, to be clear, they had already acquired some of the players who helped turn the season around. At the time we did this, I think I did this on February 11th. They had not acquired all of the players who ended up becoming a part of the team. So I just want that to be out there when like all of these teams are like, guess what, dunk. And it's like, yeah, sorry, I didn't know Nwobodo would be the best teammate in the league before he had ever even signed for the team he ended up playing for. I would love to see the tweet threads if we put some accuracy in there, but clearly people don't care about accurate reporting around Major League Soccer, so I'll let it go. This show's about research, and it's about facts.
And the smartest man in the room right now is Mr. Kalen Carr, who either wasn't asked to make predictions or ignored all the emails. Yeah. Kalen, would you like to comment?
Kalen ignores a lot of emails.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a sicko, but I'm not that crazy. You know, like, I'm not going to go make the preseason. I can't even predict who's going to make the playoffs today. Like, we got 2 weeks left. But yeah, also, I had a feeling that Austin was going to like print it out, put it in black and white, slow motion, you know, do the whole thing. Just make it so beautiful to dunk on. That I do appreciate the production value around dunking on MLS experts. Like, if you're going to do it. I know they had like the Say Shush campaign with Adrian Heath a couple years ago. They've hired a rapper, I think, for that one. It didn't really hit for me. So I do appreciate the artistic take of Austin to really bring it to the kind of like that premium next level.
The image on the piece of paper Josh Wolf is holding looks fake. I'm just throwing that out there. It doesn't look real. It looks like someone went back and put it on a blank piece of paper, maybe a green piece of paper. But I don't know.
We're going to have to maybe do that next year for preseason. We're all going to need to take a picture with a blank piece of paper, and put it out on Twitter, and just see what people fill in on
absolutely
that.
Not.
Absolutely not. We'll find one. I'm going to find one. I'm going to Photoshop one in on you, Doyle. We'll see how this goes. All right. That's the best thing we saw in week 32. Of course, go check out Doyle's armchair analyst column on the site. I'm sure we'll hit a bunch of that as we go through the weekend in detail here. We'll start with the playoff side of things, because that's what it's all about. You know, 2 weeks left. You can do the math. Week 32, officially out this weekend. Done. Not going to make the playoffs. 0% chance. Toronto FC, Chicago Fire, and Sporting Kansas City. Six teams are in, the top three teams in each conference. LAFC for sure are going to finish atop the West and get that bye and then home field advantage. Philly are a pretty clear case to do so. They would have to collapse down the stretch here, and Montreal would have to win out, basically. So six teams are in. In each conference, 11 teams technically alive. That means that four teams below the seven still could, you know, in theory, jump the line. Here are the teams, though, according to 538, that are under 50% probability to make the playoffs. Columbus Crew drew 1-1. 90+5 game-tying goal in Columbus for Santi Moreno, 45% to get in. On tiebreaker, they are below the line under Inter Miami, who won 3-2 with a late goal of their own on 42 points. Real Salt Lake dropped below, losing at home to FC Cincinnati. Good one for Cincinnati, bad one for Columbus, 35% to get in. We'll talk more about that game here in just a second. Seattle, 17% to get in. Ed Ritter hit us up on Twitter, said, is producer Anders in full sackcloth and ashes? Shame. Shame, Anders. Shame on you. We will debate the Sounders and whether their season is either a failure or success in just a little bit. And then you have Atlanta at 7%, Charlotte at 4%, Vancouver at 4%, New England under 1%, Colorado under 1%, and that all makes sense. Right now, which team has the best chance to jump that line right now? Or are we sort of stuck with our seven? In the East, you've got Atlanta and Columbus, like, kind of shadowing Miami, but Atlanta are missing it. They have like minus one game in hand. Columbus and Miami both have three games left. So while they've had a bounce up, maybe it's not going to be possible for them. Galaxy have a game in hand. It comes this weekend. They're the only MLS team in action during the international break outside League's Cup showcase. Shout out. They're going to play San Jose. They got to win that one. If they do, seems pretty clear that they would make the playoffs, though not guaranteed. Vancouver, Seattle probably need miracles. Who could jump the line, Doyle? Like, if you were betting on it, who would it be?
Of this group, I think RSL. And they have not been playing well, though they have not been playing so badly that you would expect them to take only, you know, 1 point from their past four games. But a lot of it just comes down to their schedule. They're at the Galaxy, and then they finish home against Portland. Portland has two games left. Their next one is home against LAFC, which I do think is kind of a bad matchup for the Timbers. So it could be that it comes down to decision day, where either RSL will have already jumped the Timbers, or a win at home against Portland gets RSL in. It should be, I should know, if Portland draw, Portland's had 45, no, Portland's had 46. Okay, so a draw against LAFC would put Portland clear of RSL if RSL doesn't take a point against the Galaxy. But regardless, just the way the schedule works out, like, it's still RSL's playoff fate is still in their own hands. I don't think that's not true for Columbus. Columbus is chasing teams that all have played the same games as them, and I think all have slightly easier schedules to close the season than the Crew do.
I'm going to say Columbus. Clearly, I'm going to have to defend that now. I would argue on the easier schedule thing. Orlando still has to go to Inter Miami because of that rescheduled game, and they have to travel to NYCFC. Although I don't believe that's at Yankee Stadium, because I think this was the last regular season game. Yeah, it's at Red Bull. So a little bit easier to understand. And then Orlando hosts Columbus the final game of the season, which is delicioso. So I would argue that if Columbus does what they need to do, they probably will get in, because they are 3 points back. They do play head-to-head, and Inter Miami has to win that game, where Columbus's game that's getting made up is the game against Charlotte, which, not an easy game. Charlotte's been really good at home. Again, another big win. I'd still rather go to Charlotte than Inter Miami, in that game in between October 1st and Decision Day. So I would say Columbus is the team that I think has the chance to jump up. I think they should. Whether they do or not will decide the perception of their season and potentially who is in charge of that team and playing on that team for the future.
I had Supporter Shield up next to dig into LAFC and Philly and maybe even Montreal, but let's just skip ahead and do these Ohio teams and the results from this weekend for them. We can start with RSL Cincinnati. RSL at home, lose 2-1. Brenner with two goals. Tom Bogert pulled the stats on Brenner, 14 goals, 5 assists, and 1,831 minutes. That's a goal contribution basically every 90 minutes. If you look at the analytics on him, they've been this way for most of the season since he got going, but they're among the very, very upper echelon of forwards in this league, 85th percentile among forwards in non-penalty XG per 90. So he's getting the chances, he's scoring them. 88th in tackles even, 82nd in progressive passes. We've seen that sort of borne out in the play of Vasquez around him, as well as his connection with Lucho. I mean, Brenner is the definition of a David Goss theorem man. He was a distressed asset. In the offseason, he was distressed. He was like, I want out. I want to leave. I don't, like, send me back to Brazil. This ain't for me, this life in Cincy and MLS. You know, the whole fan base was distressed. Three straight spoons. This new, this new group of management, basically on the soccer side, has changed things around. And Brenner and Lucho and Vasquez are an incredible threesome. And then in this game, I mean, Roman Celentano, a guy that, you know, look, he's a GA guy. They get him in the draft. You think maybe give him a year in MLS Next Pro, he'll make a jump eventually, maybe be a starting goalkeeper that makes all these terrible memories for FC Cincinnati between the posts go away. He has a huge PK save in this one, a bunch of big moments. It looks like they're going to make the playoffs. Kalen, to go to RSL as well, given their history, and to do it in a game that is cross-conferences, but like the definition of 6 points, they solidly above the line, RSL now below. Feels to me like since you're going to make the playoffs, feels to me like I wouldn't want Cincy to come to my house in the playoffs, because they're just going to be playing with house money. And in Nwodo, in Miazga, in that attacking threesome, anything could happen. Anything could happen.
Yeah, this was the formula, too, if you look at what it might look like going on the road in a playoff game and how they might handle it. You can see how this team would approach it. And, you know, we talk a lot about on the show of like building a roster and how you get the best, you know, how you make it work, especially if you're trying to turn something around from the years of just dysfunction. And you look at it and you got to find good players, good value, right? But we talk about doing that from different places. And you mentioned Celentano in the draft. We've seen in the past LAFC do this now that, you know, they've made a bigger move to bring in a goalkeeper with more experience. But sometimes you mentioned Andre Blake, right? I'm not saying that Celentano is going to reach that height, but he's a guy that you can build around for a while and can get results already. And it hasn't just been him sitting back there and kind of like having the defense protect him, because at times they really haven't. But he's been able to step up in a big way, making the players around you better. I mean, Brenner has improved. Vasquez has improved as time. So it's not just about like giving minutes to these guys, right? I think that sometimes gets lost in the fray of saying, okay, well, Vasquez finally got a chance and he just was good and he was always good. I think they've done a good job of actually like working with him on his movement, working with him on his holdup play, seeing how these pieces connect. Yes, Lucho, right? But he needs good pieces around him. Brenner is not just a poacher, right? He's sometimes playing provider. He's playing 1-2s. He's looking for the right passes. You know, the confidence in this one, just to take that extra little moment to stay composed, turn and you know, put it on frame, put it in between the goalkeeper's legs. So I like this this team. They've, you know, they have the little hiccup with Miazga making a bad back pass. But other than that, like, they look pretty solid to me. So I think they're a team that can actually do some damage in the playoffs, which is, you know, just making the playoffs would have been great for this team after getting the spoon 3 years in a row. But I think they have a little bit more to say.
Flipside Doyle, RSL. We have a tweet here basically that the RSL X dog factor expired.
Yeah. And it has a habit of doing that, right? Because we see this every year. There's always a couple of teams that come out and are kind of sloppy and raggedy, but they try real hard. They just try real hard every single week. And you can pick up points doing that. But by the time August, September roll around, everybody's trying hard. Everybody's desperate for points. And that 5% extra effort that you've been giving, everybody's given that now. And it comes down to talent more often. And it comes down to a little bit of luck. And, you know, this can hit teams like LAFC during that 5-game winless skid. They were horribly unlucky. Right. They were bad, but it was compounded by being really, really unlucky. And whereas the first 25 games of the year, they probably were a little bit lucky. They probably weren't quite as good as their record said they were. So this is kind of what's hitting RSL. And you see it in this game because, you know, since he deserved all the praise that you guys just gave them, but they were not the better team for most of this game. Like for the first hour, RSL were, I thought, pretty clearly the better team. Celentano saves a PK. Cordova can't get ahead to the ball. And then Pablo Mascherani made a really weird sub at halftime. He took out Jasper Lofelsund for, was it Oviedo? The new signing they made this summer. And look, Lofelsund is, he's Bedoya-esque in his ability to just like keep sprinting and get pressure all over the field on one side and then always sprinting to space to give passing options on the other side. And as soon as RSL, it was Brian Ojeda. Thank you, Anders. As soon as RSL lost that, as soon as they didn't have Lofelsund like doing a million sprints every time he's out there on both sides of the ball, as soon as they didn't have that buzzing through midfield, Cincinnati started to get a hold on the game. And then when Diego Luna came out as well, RSL lost, I think, their best midfield creator, because in this game, Pablo played a 3-5-2, and that put Savarino up top as more of a goal-scoring threat, which, to be clear, I like him more there. It was a combination of factors that we've seen over the past month and a half that have slowly caught up to this RSL team that spent, you know, basically the entire year up until Saturday above the playoff line. I do tend to think, though, that if they go into their next two games and they play as hard and as well as they did in the first hour of this game, that they will give themselves a real shot of making the playoffs again. I thought they played well for an hour, but they just don't have the same type of attacking talent that Cincinnati has. And like I said at the start of this little filibuster, we're at the time of the year where talent often takes a few more hands than X Dog does.
I agree with Doyle about the way this game played out. It's why, if I'm an FC Cincinnati fan, and if I'm a top three seed in the Eastern Conference, I'm feeling that Cincinnati is an interesting team in the playoffs, because that front three attack can win you a game that you're the worst team, that you're not the better team in. That front three attack can score a goal out of nothing, which will change the pace of a game that you're losing. And I think Lucho himself, Brenner and Vasquez have this year, but Lucho has at least that playoff experience where you know he's going to come at least a high level performance in big games and deliver. So I think Cincinnati it's probably too much to make a run to MLS Cup, because they'd have to do it more than once. But in a one-off game, I don't know what it looks like against Red Bulls. At Montreal, it could be at NYCFC, not at Yankee Stadium. I just think FC Cincinnati, they will have confidence that they're going to score goals in every playoff game they play in.
The other thing I think is a good sign for them, too, is that I guess it's indicative of some of the sloppiness in years past, but also still this year on the back line. The goal they give up is off a throw-in. And you know, Matt Miazga's reaction to that was pretty telling of, like, what the hell are we doing here, guys?
Yeah.
Like, you have to be aware. Better to have those moments now, but this team still has those sort of brain fart defensive moments. But I think maybe Miazga, the pressure of the playoffs can help them sort of lock down on that. And then you're going to need moments like that from Celentano on the PK, keeping his heel on the line, making a huge save. They did not win the XG, to go to your guys' point. Like, they got beat by an entire goal. But in the end, when Brenner's the guy on the end of those chances, and for RSL, they don't have that guy, that's the difference. 45 points for Cincinnati above the line right now. Feeling confident, but not completely secure.
I just was going to throw in, I had Felipe Cardenas on MLS today. We talked about FC Cincinnati as well. A lot of the same things Kalen mentioned. There's just a lot of things they've done, like drafting a GA goalkeeper who's a domestic, like signing a DP D-mid, that are like MLS 101 that they've never done as a club. And Chris Albright walked.
David, with their second first-round pick, they just drafted a good senior center back, left-footed senior center back, who they could plug in. And Ian Murphy has given them 1,500 completely adequate minutes this year.
Yeah.
Completely adequate is better than anything they had ever gotten from any center back in their previous 3 years.
A lot of it is that type of stuff. And then I'd add in the one to stick with Brenner. The other is, they went out and signed Alec Khan, which was the right move.
Yep.
And then they did not force him back into the team when Celentano was playing well. And maybe everyone would have done that, or maybe not. It would have been, this was one of our big offseason signings. We have to give him the opportunity. They didn't do that. Celentano's had hiccups. He's made some big mistakes this season, but they stuck with him. And look at some of the MLS Cup winning teams, Stefan Fry, Alex Bono when he was on a GA, all that. It's a good formula to put together a good roster.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to Cincinnati. It's not there yet. Not there yet.
MLS Cup, FC Cincinnati, you're welcome.
Let's go. Wouldn't go to Cincy, but I do need to get to TQL Stadium. Maybe for Guadalajara midweek, a little League's Cup showcase. Huh?
Oh, boy.
No? Okay. All right. But that could be fun. How about Columbus?
Asking
Portland?
Us if you're allowed to go?
I don't know. I'm not allowed to go. I can't even get permission to go to your wedding. So we'll leave that.
Whoa.
And Mindy was in LA. I didn't even ask.
Dirty laundry.
Just to be clear, Mindy be like, this is BS. This is BS. You didn't even ask me. I didn't.
I hope you're in a soundproof room, Weeby.
Yeah. it travels upward. Hopefully she's on a call. I'm just kidding. How about Columbus Portland? Crew drop points again. Doyle, you predicted in the group chat. I don't want to out you here, but you were like, what are the odds that we see a 90+4 game equalizer here? And that's like literally exactly what we got from Santi Moreno, who wall passed off Bill Tuiloma's dome into his own path, and then had just an incredible finish off the half volley into the lower corner to beat Eloy Room. Caleb Porter's reaction on the sideline said it all. Just kind of apoplectic, just like, not again, my God, no. Crew have continued to drop points from winning from winning positions. I mean, this is the stat from your column, Doyle. They have now conceded 15 goals when leading or tied after the 75th minute. That's crazy. just 21 goals conceded in all other scenarios, and they've dropped 6 points in the past 8 days thanks to that. They would. This is a outside the last 15 minutes as a playoff team, but those last 15 minutes they matter quite a bit.
Yeah, and like we did this whole segment on last Monday's show, and like I don't know what else to add. I will say I don't think they were defending quite as deep. They weren't bunkering quite as hard in the final 15 minutes of this game as they were last week.
And they didn't against Miami too, by the way.
They didn't midweek. Yeah, because the same thing happened midweek because Pepita got a 82nd minute winner. Yeah.
They were pushing for the winner. They were open. I think it goes partially though to why they've bunkered, because they are open and they get pulled apart. And I just think there's no confidence.
But it's weird because they don't get pulled apart in any other phase of the game, any other time of the game, right? If you look at this team defending in that same game in the 60th minute, they're compact. They have veterans just about everywhere. You know, hey, I think Aiden Morris has taken a step forward in terms of his reading of the game. You know, he's playing big minutes now with D-mid. Like they don't look like this team until the 75th minute, and the 75th minute comes and they're literally the worst team in the league.
Aaron Widman said, did somebody in Columbus curse the franchise for 10 years in order to get that MLS Cup? That's the MLS is back MLS Cup. And is Caleb Porter under real pressure here?
It's year four. It was 5 years in Portland. It feels like there's a way it goes wrong under him. And a lot of it then becomes cultural, which is hard to fix because you're not going to sign 20 new players. So it comes down to a lot of times what we see midseason, which is like one person versus 23 people or 28 people and whatever it is. But at the same time, MLS Cup is a pretty big deal. And so I can understand like respecting that longer than if you didn't win it. And so I don't think there's a clear-cut answer or a simple solution to it. I think the hope is they limp into the playoffs and then they can come out of this year. And I did this on the show with Doyle last week, which then the argument is, well, I only had the star striker for half the year. We couldn't build around them. We lost Arthur. Mensah's now out hurt. We never had a left back. And you could sort of, I can put together the script for that argument to say, this is what we could now do next year.
Well, you got to make the playoffs probably to talk in those terms. And even if you don't, I don't know. We'll see. This big result on the road for Portland, but a bigger one at home for the Crew, dropping these once again. Before we get to the Shield, I do want to hit one other from the East here, I think, because it had big playoff implications. Not for DC, who are out, have been out, but for Inter Miami, who go to DC, needed a win, got some magic from Gonzalo Higuain late. We'll hit our golden boot standings here in just a second because some genius picked Gonzalo despite the doubters around him. He stuck to his convictions, you might say. But there is a bigger moment in this match that we have to at least educate you on if you weren't aware of it. In the 59th minute, right after Taxi Fontas had made the game 2-2, I believe, with a goal, there was a coming together between Fontas and Damian Lowe, Inter Miami defender. There was a stoppage of play. It was strange watching the game. It was like, well, what's going on here? Ismael Elfout, the referee, is talking to the captains. He's talking to the head coaches. Eventually, there are yellow cards for Taxi Fontas and Damian Lowe in the 62nd minute. And then Taxi, after a brief restart of play, is subbed out by Wayne Rooney. After the match, Inter Miami said, in no uncertain terms, that there was a racist comment made. Phil Neville's quote is that there was a racist comment made. It was used. It's unacceptable in society, basically saying it's the worst word that you can use. DeAndre Yedlin said the same thing, and I'll have some quotes from him here in just a second. Wayne Rooney said the referee came over and spoke to me and Phil. There was a complaint, which I'm sure will get investigated. Indeed, it will be. I'll read the MLS statement here in just a second. There's not really much more I can say. Said Rooney, referee Ismael Elfath, that told a pool reporter that no official had heard racist or abusive language and none was detected via video review, but he did follow the protocol set up by Pro for that situation. That's where you bring the captains together, go to the head coaches, inform everybody of what's going on. MLS's statement here is that MLS has zero tolerance for abusive and offensive language, and we take these allegations very seriously. An investigation into this matter will begin promptly. Further information will be provided upon completion of that investigation. DC had a statement saying we indeed will be cooperating with that investigation. It has to be said here, I'll just reiterate, that currently, these are allegations. Taxi Fontas, of course, has come out with a statement himself, and I'll read that here. Quote, I did not use the word I am being accused of using. That despicable racial slur is one I denounce and did not use. We had a hot discussion on the field, but I have not racially abused anyone. I firmly reject racism in any form. It is despicable. There's more to that statement. You can go read it. Pablo Maurer has it on his Twitter at MLSist. DeAndre Yedlin, for his part, said that Inter Miami had decided that they were not going to continue playing this game unless something was done with, as he said, that player. That was Taxi Fontas, as we found out, and Wayne Rooney did remove him. Yedlin further said it doesn't even feel like a win given what they went through on this, and now we await the results of the MLS investigation. I will say, just in a general sense, because, again, these are still allegations. You know, we've said this before. We've said it many times. I think on this show, we've made a point of sort of making our personal beliefs known. You know, racism in any form, no. Gone, out of society, of our game, of the places that we live, that we are with family, with friends, and just in general in our society. It's not something that we accept as normal. It's not something we accept as acceptable, ever. And right now, as I said, allegations, so we'll await the investigation. But I think as a general statement, we can just reiterate that line and say that I think I can speak for all of you pretty comfortably that, you know, that's the way we feel. We'll see what comes of this investigation. But as a general statement, if you hear something, if you are around family that says something, if you're on a field and you hear something like this, I think we all have a duty to respond in a really strong way and make it clear that it is not acceptable. It's not something that we're willing to be around. And that's about as far as I think I can take it in no uncertain terms. Any thoughts from you guys before we hit the actual soccer part of this game?
No, the only thing I'll say is just looking at it. I mean, I share the same feelings of feeling just like it's awful to have to deal with this situation. And I think, you know, in the moment, if you're just looking at the way that happened, I can say that the way that I saw the Inter Miami players come together and support their teammate, I thought was really admirable. I think Ishmael Elfeth is a referee that I've gotten to know. I mean, he's refereed matches I've played, but I've gotten to know him a little bit as well too. And I think just as like a person, and I think, you know, and also as a professional, the way he handled the situation, following protocol and making sure everyone was aware of it, I thought he did a really good job of that. And, you know, all the comments around afterwards, I think I listened to DeAndre Yedlin speak as well too, and he's been outspoken on issues like this in the past. I think his comments were spot on. And so I think, you know, for me, and this is just speaking personally, whenever I hear a situation like this or someone saying this happened to me or happened to my teammate or I saw this, I put a lot of credence behind that, and that has a lot of weight for me personally. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. I think, we'll leave it there and we'll await where this story goes. But it was a huge win for Miami. Ultimately, I know DeAndre said it doesn't even feel like a win, and I can definitely, I can respect that from his point of view. But in the standings, it is 3 points. Higuain gets a goal, takes him up to 13. This is, I don't know if this isn't the biggest win in Inter Miami's history. I mean, they've made the playoffs here, but it is among them, especially for this team that is sort of ultimately rebuilding, Doyle, after what has been, you know, we talk about Cincinnati's tumultuous start. Like, it has been in a different way, just as tumultuous for Inter Miami. And we've talked over and over this season about the belief, about the togetherness that Phil Neville has fostered. And I'm, you know, you saw some of that on the field, as you said, Kaylin, in that unfortunate situation. But you also saw it in the way that they responded soccer-wise to come and get this win. And you saw it from their star player, who was not their star player for a while, but, you know, now is a absolute difference maker, Doyle. Gonzalo Higuain is one of the most fun players to watch in this league right now, and he is producing.
Yeah, he's been awesome since, what, about early July? I'm looking up his stats right now as we speak, but I think that was his 13th goal. He's got 13 goals and 3 assists in 1,500 minutes, which is, I mean, for anyone, that's a fantastic season. You probably, if you you know, prorate that over a 3,400 minute season, that's like MVP caliber season. And he has been MVP caliber since working his way back into Phil Neville's good graces in early July. And he is one of, if not the biggest reason that this team is above the playoff line. I didn't think they played great. There was like a weird lack of midfield play in this game. I thought that, you know, DC's pretty ripe for the picking when it comes to just getting the ball in midfield and pinging it around a little bit. But everything Miami was doing, where they were trying to do like quick transition to overload up the right side, you know, or up the left side. Like, it was all transition play. It was no midfield play, but it worked. You know, they got into good spots a million times, and it felt like eventually one of those pullbacks was going to end up on the foot of Higuain or Campana again, and that's how it ended. Their final three games, away to Toronto. And Toronto's one of those teams who have not covered themselves in glory here. Toronto does not look like they're going to be putting up much of a fight the rest of the season. Then they are home against Orlando City on Wednesday, October 5th. That's like a little mini decision day, because some teams are going to be eliminated on that day. And then on decision day, they're home against the Impact.
Nice.
That's nice. Oh, sorry. Impact. Home against Montreal.
It's not just me.
They'll always be the Impact to me. That is not an easy schedule. But if you look back, you know, all the way back to April, this team is more than just like just keeping their heads above water. This team, once they put that 6-game start behind them, they've been like a solid playoff team. And even this little 3-game losing streak that they had at the start of the month or close of August, whenever it was, that was really sparked by the Pozuelo red card. Right. Since he's come back, I think they're 2 wins and 1 loss, and they've been the better team, I think, in arguably all 3 games. So as long as Pozuelo's out there, and now in this game, it was Campana who had, 2 goals, and Higuain playing together up top in a diamond, like, they could do it. They could do it. And in a way, that's more stunning than Cincinnati. No, it's not. It's not. The Cincinnati thing is, I think, more stunning.
There's elements of similarity between both, in that they can be had, but they've found sort of a belief and structure that works for them, and they have 3 attacking players that are arguably elite. You know, on one side, it's Lucho, Brenner, and Vasquez. The other, it's Higuain, Campana, Pozuelo, who sort of had a little bit of a resurgent here after a drought, and then obviously Pozuelo.
The real takeaway from this is, like, hire a GM named Chris. Like, that's obviously, that works every time in MLS.
Easily.
I should also say Neville deserves some credit here as well, because you look through and you say, okay, well, in the case of Cincinnati, even, they've had a much more stable front three, at least, that they've been able to kind of build continuity with. And the fact that you're dealing with a player of the stature of Higuain, and the way that it really sort of crashed, it seemed like it was a complete failure. And I was absolutely in the camp of saying, this is not the guy you want to lead or like set the culture of a new club that's trying to find its way or figure itself out. And it's funny, I actually feel like they didn't really ask him to do that at a certain point. And I think Neville took it on and said, we're going to find other ways to do to have that leadership. And he benched him when he needed to, and he played Campana, right? But he didn't throw him away at that point, and he kept him engaged. And I would say, even when you look at Bryce Duke and Tim playing moments, and then they signed Pozuelo, and then it's like, okay, but you don't lose Duke. That's a little different, obviously, situation than losing Higuain, right? But that's part of the challenge of managing as MLS, is you have to, so many different types of characters, personalities. And I would say at certain points in the past, this Inter Miami team, I would describe as fragile, very fragile. Like, the moments when things got tough, things would go, one loss would compound into 2, you know, losses that were getting bad would go to 5. And what we've actually seen is quite the opposite now, that they've one of the more resilient teams. And I think that's where they've been able to continue to find goals late on in games. And actually now Higuain has come back, ironically, and kind of like pushed at that very end of matches and finding those, you would never have thought that like late in games, he was going to be a difference maker the way he, you know, from a fitness standpoint or whatever it was. And now he's finding late goals to win games. So, yeah, but I give Neville a ton of credit for being able to manage this. And I think they do have a chance to get in.
Huge for my Golden Boot team, the Gonzalo Higuain resurgence. We have to check the standings here. In last, David Goss, 74 goals and 40 assists. Let's take this moment to
quality over quantity, baby.
Let's take this moment. Look, you had some good. We had some good draft picks. You also had some not so good draft picks. Let's just take a look at the good ones. Daniel Gosdag,
the team we put together.
Yeah, Daniel Gosdag. That was a really inspired pick from you. Congratulations on that one. Outside of that, I'm not outside. We don't have a double digit goal score outside of Daniel Gosdag.
Dave.
Wow. We've got Shaqiri in here. He fortunate to be taking PKs to get him up to 7 goals. Mason Toy and Io, you went north of the border for promise. You got 4 goals out of the pair of them. Joseph Martinez didn't see that locker room blow up coming. Gotta say, yeah. Giassi traded Patrick Klamala. Boy, Red Bulls fans looking at you on this one.
I will say this. The XG, it's been electric. And the 4 goals Mason Toy and Io Akinola scored together were like ecstasy. So it was worth it.
That was worth it. Kalen, just a little bit better. You're fortunate to have Dave in these ranks. 79 goals, 43 assists from you.
I've got like a third of those from one player, too, I think. I think I've
Hani Mukhtar was an inspired choice from you. Reynoso, also a good one. Those are your only 2 double digit. You had Rui Diaz, unfortunate for you on that one. Ola Kamara, you know, could have worked out better. 9 goals here. Buxa sold, so you took a chance on that one. Yeah, Insigne was a good late.
I thought this was just
pick
the Golden Boot. I didn't realize this was like an aggregate thing. So
me too.
I actually
think
I'm winning.
I was told.
Perhaps.
I
you're
was
not.
Told that too.
We'll have to check the tape on this. Again, we have documentation of all this. 111 goals for the Fighting Weebies here, the Rainbow Narwhals. So we're feeling good about what we did in the draft. Gustavo Bo could have worked out better for me. Demir Krylock, that one's really painful. But I'm on Kalen's tail if we decide that actually it's the Golden Boot with Driussi on 21. Jesus Ferreira, give him to me. Romel Kyoto. Very proud of that one. Dave wasn't the only one on the
Club
de Foot bandwagon. And Chicharito is, you know, I would like him to finish those PKs. I might be tied with Doyle, if so, because Doyle's on 114 goals right now. So I'm 3 goals behind you, Doyle. I could catch you.
Mm-hmm.
Vela, Tati, you got 13 out of Tati. Well done. Arango was a good one. Julian Carranza, you know, take a victory lap there. Jeremy Abobasi, another victory lap for you. Michael Estrada, yet another moment where Dave led you into the desert. That's good. Lewis Morgan is a, you know, you really got the most out of Lewis Morgan.
I had Ura and Lewis Morgan.
Yes, you did. But you also had Kasper Schabilko. So that was,
that's an impressive haul, though. Depth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got it. He's got the value picks here outside of Estrada. I mean, Zellerion got you 9 goals so far, et cetera. But yeah, right now Doyle in the lead on that one. Let's talk about the
I also have the most assists. I'm looking at the doc now. I have 114 goals and 55 assists. Weeby has 111 and 42.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think assists were agreed to be the tiebreaker.
Out.
So
I'm
you've got
far out
you're like front. LAFC. You've got the tiebreakers right now, but that doesn't mean you can't collapse and I can't come in at the last second. This is my MLS Cup this year, this Golden Boot draft. I need the
it's
W.
It's tight.
Here.
What, it's down to 3 goals? That's
3
tight,
goals.
Huh?
Yeah. 2 weeks left, 3 goals. That's the way you want it to end. Speaking of the Shield, though, we have a Battle Royale. LAFC on 64. They win at home against Houston 3-1. Philly on 64. They go to Atlanta and draw. That means based on tiebreakers that LAFC have the best chance. Tiebreakers go in order, wins, goal differential, and then goals scored. LAFC have 20 wins, whereas Philly just have 18 wins. Philly do have the edge on goal differential by far, plus 28 for LAFC to plus 46 for Philly. Let's start with that LAFC game. Steve Cherundolo has been talking a good bit about how like the guys you see on the attacking side are the guys that they're going to stick with. And so you saw Buanga, you saw Chicho Arango, who you just can't take him off the field at this point, and you saw Vela. What have we thought of Buanga so far? Doyle, did I see you taking Cabral-esque pot shots on Twitter?
I did. All right, so I'm gonna say that by the eye test, I think Belanga is gonna be really good. He's obviously really tricky 1v1.
His feet are crazy.
His feet are crazy good, like Brian Rodriguez. And he gets into he gets into a lot of great spots. He eliminates players off the dribble. He, you know, he can pass. He draws penalties, as we saw last night. Through 358 minutes, he's the worst finisher in MLS history. That's not opinion, right? I'm going by our friends at American Soccer Analysis. I shouldn't say MLS history. The worst finisher of the past decade. I went by per 96, 350 minutes or more played over the course of a single season. And Puanga's goals minus expected goals is minus 0.51. Nobody, I should say, like Christian Benteke is up there himself at minus 0.45. So, like, it takes a minute to settle in. I generally trust guys who find good spots to end up being really good, productive players, especially because Bwanga has a history of doing that in Ligue 1, which is a higher level than MLS. Like, he should be really good here. Kevin Cabral also finds a lot of good spots. He finds incredible spots. He makes really great runs, or at least he used to until, like, he just has the yips now. He's so afraid of missing sitters, he's not even making runs anymore. But, like, the whole reason I thought Cabral was going to be a David Goss theory guy is because you could see last year he was in the right spot all the time and he was just missing tap-ins. There's a little bit of that to Bwanga's game so far. I suspect it'll come good, but oh boy, the similarities are tough to ignore at this point.
Would be nice for it to come good this year, as opposed to waiting for that theorem to kick into.
Throw in one of the guys who's on this list who's gone under the radar, maybe just because they've been bad, is Luis Araujo. He gets in crazy good spots,
yes,
and makes the worst decisions, and then will hit a dime from midfield for an assist. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, he's elite. He's bordering on that Cabral and what Bwanga's pushing into conversation.
Yep. Here's a question for you, Kaelin. Antoine Latron, hit us up. LAFC seemed to be a better team with Bale ... on the bench. How can they handle this situation? What does that mean for next year in their contract situations?
I don't think they can look to next year. I think right now you have to... I've been saying they have to go and pick their best 11 and run with it. And I think this last match will be that. For me, it's very clear it's Arango and Vela. And then the question is who plays on the left. And Bwanga, I think it's actually Bwanga or Opoku on the left. And I think Bale is going to be coming off the bench. And same with Tello. And I think that... the thing that I like about Bwanga is kind of like Diego Rossi. He's able to stretch the field and get in behind. And I think that when you look at the way Arango, yes, he can get in behind. Vela doesn't really do that as much anymore. He likes to drift inside and get underneath and find those sort of soft spots and pockets. But Bwanga is a threat in behind. And the other thing too is defensively he works. And I think that that's a risk if you put in Bale, and probably one of the main reasons why he won't be a starter. And I know that's, I was saying you have to give him a chance. You have to let him run out, get 90s like they did. But the team didn't perform as well when he did. And so I think right now the margin for error, and I think this supporter shield push has actually forced them to make tougher decisions where they don't have the same leeway anymore. And I think that's where Bwanga comes in and gets his opportunities. The team wins. And I think they're going to probably stick with this lineup. So what that means for next year, I don't know, but I don't think LAFC has they've stacked the deck to push to all in on this year, right? And then figure it out later. The only thing I'll say, Houston actually did create some problems at certain points. I thought they played pretty well. It's just that
Coco was amazing in that first half, dude.
He was
so good.
And if you can apply pressure in that middle of midfield, and you actually even Quintero was like, up winning some balls. Elie is so important to this team. He was. He was
like, actually weird. Someone was playing the whole game, not just
sitting. I mean, he was applying pressure and winning balls. And there was like in that middle of midfield, it was the same when LAFC was great in the past. I think it still is. Ilya, if you can, he's so good at playing out of pressure, but if you can try and make him uncomfortable, and then you have to turn Hollingshead and Palacios into defenders. If you allow them to get forward in the attack, it's just really difficult. You see the quality. So, but putting pressure on them and making them turn into defenders, but it's tough to do. So I think, as far as Bale, I think he's got to come in off the bench. But if you have to pick and you say, Tello, Bale, like those are some pretty, either Mahala or you think of Bwanga if he's coming off, although I think he probably will start. Those are some pretty nice options to change the game.
If you just give Ryan Hollingshead's finishing ability to Bwanga right now, this is a game changer for LAFC because that man is efficient and special in front of goal.
Solid stash.
Yeah, you're raising your hand. I mean,
yeah,
I'm calling on you.
So since match week, okay, this is way longer than I thought it was going to be. Since match week 20 in MLS, LAFC have beaten SKC, Seattle, RSL, Charlotte, DC, RSL, and Houston. They've not beaten a playoff team in that entire run of time. They've lost to San Jose, Austin, Houston, Dallas, and drew Minnesota. That game was on July 9th. Like, I understand this is a good win. This is big. This is why I picked Philly to win Supporters Shield a month or so ago, and that's why I still think they're going to win it as of today.
So the last two games for LAFC, they had two games left at Portland and then Nashville at home. Not an easy end. Not an easy end by any means.
Those are what I would call playoff teams.
Right. Which... correct. And right now, obviously, they have 64 points tied with Philly, but let's say they drop some points in there. Philly are at Charlotte and then Toronto at home. At Charlotte, we've established not an easy game. They're 9-6, I want to say.
I just want us all to prepare last week, TFC at Philly, to create a new graphics package to be able to add the amount of digits that will be necessary to the goals Philly scores. That feels like 11-0 if you're asking me today to put a bet on it.
Oh boy. Let's talk Philly. We've got LAFC fans. Yeah. Get the paper. Get your paper up. How many goals will Philly score? There you go. We need a cleaner photo from you.
It turns out Megan doesn't have a lot of empty pages in her.
Yeah. Doing a lot of work there. We have an LAFC fan saying Philly opened the door back up for LAFC, which they did with this draw in Atlanta. Not their best performance. Speaking of goals, they created almost nothing against the Five Stripes. What did this game tell us, if anything, about Philly? It was just a blip, or say more about Atlanta?
I think to Doyle's sort of point in the Blake conversation, I would say it's fine. This is the best team that they're going to play left in the regular season. But Bedoya is a massive issue for Philly in if they want to make MLS Cup and make an MLS Cup run. I think he's the least replaceable player on the team.
Oh, wow.
And him getting hurt is pretty big. Because if Jose Martinez goes out, they can move Flock in. They can bring McGlynn in. They can just push Jack Elliott up. They've shown that they can win games when Elliott hasn't played at center back. They've replaced right back. They have Corey Burke, who can give you some good minutes up top. They have McGlynn and Paxton Aronson, which means you could fill in for Gosdag if you had to. Obviously, Andre Blake maybe changes that. But Bedoya getting hurt, I think it's just a scary moment for them, and it's probably good that this is the 2 weeks that they have off.
I thought Bedoya being hurt was part of it. Jose Martinez just having an absolute stinker was yet. He couldn't complete a pass. Like it was incredible the like how many easy balls he was giving away. McGlynn couldn't create any rhythm either, and so then all service got cut off to that front three. It is a blip. In that I don't think that Philly are going to play that poorly again. And full credit to Atlanta, who played like their hair was on fire. Like they have a legit chance now. Like they are refusing to die, and I respect the hell out of that. But it's also a reminder that historically speaking, most MLS Cup winners could walk out on the field and out-talent you. And I think Philly are at that point, right? I think that we, you know, we can recognize now that guys who came through the draft, like Blake, obviously, and Elliott, or guys who were sort of unheralded, you know, international signings like Glesnes and Gazdag and Martinez are actually like really, really good to great. But there's just a difference in terms of pedigree, in terms of what NYCFC had running their midfield last year. You know, like Maxi Morales was a star at Atalanta for however long. There's a difference between, you know, spending $10 million on Lucas Zelarayan and bringing him in, or, you know, having Ladero and Rui Diaz in 2019. And, you know, obviously the amount of money and the pedigree that that 2018 Atlanta team had. Like, Philly are, I think they're that good, but it's not to the level where like those teams could go out there and throw out a B plus performance and walk away with 3 points against, you know, a lot of teams that they faced. And Philly's not like that. Philly's got, you know, they got to bring their A game here. It's that time of year, and I don't think they had it in this one. And it's probably a really good reminder for these last two games, and then especially into the postseason, that their greatest strength is how together they play on both sides of the ball, and how they win that collective battle by also winning their individual battles. And there wasn't enough of that in this Atlanta game. In fact, I think Atlanta, almost all over the field, they were winning the individual battles up until they ran into the brick wall that is Andre Blake.
But throw out one thing for the playoffs, though. They're not going to go on the road.
Exactly. I would push back a little and just say
they haven't lost at home. They're 11-0 and 5 at home.
A really good point.
And they didn't lose, right? Yep. They didn't play well, and Andre Blake kept them in it. I actually think,
but they might have lost the supporter shield, because they had if they had won that game, they would be in control of the shield race. But now LAFC is in control of the race.
If they
LAFC
drew the, if they out, drew the game, they would be in control of the shield.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. That's just absolutely dragged me through the mud.
I would argue that there's actually decent parallels with NYCFC last year. It's just a lot different, right? Talas Magno was a $10 million player coming off the bench last year. Jack McGlynn and Paxton Aronson are $10 million players. It's just, they're not there yet. Steps are different. I would argue Glesnes and Collins, similar profiles. So there's actually a ton of similarities between their teams. They're just, they were done in different ways and in different segments. But in terms of the depth, I think now that Philly has shown an ability to win games with different pieces, having big games, Tati's obviously and Maxi are different level in a different way. But I don't know, in 2 years, Carranza could win a golden boot for them potentially. And Gazdag could be, I mean, he's a Hungarian international coming over. So they're different styles, obviously, but I actually think they're decent comparisons to sort of what the blueprint will look like if they do win MLS Cup.
So we have Atlanta fans going through it a little bit after this one. Nick, how the ever living insert four letter word is Atlanta still alive? Should I believe? Probably not, Nick. I would just protect your heart if you're that's the smart move here. And OMR says, is Atlanta going through the dead cat bounce, or is the team finally coming to its own? I guess we'll find out the rest of the season. They are alive, just barely. So we'll see what happens. Andre says here, don't sleep on Montreal. It would take a miracle for Montreal to get into the shield race here. 59 points, but they get a late win via Alistair Johnston. And from a ball from Romo Kyoto, got to just throw it in there. Another assist on the board for the fighting Weebies. Want to win in New England. They have DC at home and then at Miami to end the season. And we said it off the top, a really, really good team that has found a way to win on the margins all year when it's sort of crunch time. They're generally the one that comes out on the right end of it. I mean, to get 59 points on just plus 10 goal differential is pretty incredible. But I want to quickly just read a quote on a column I like to read on Monday mornings from one Matt Doyle. Mm. Good night to the Revolution. Quote, one of the worst shield defenses in league history. They set a record last year for points. Not going to make the playoffs this year. I feel comfortable saying that. And then here's the Bruce quote. I think my own personal opinion, I thought last year we played well over our heads. And I think some of our players never understood what made them successful last year. And it caught up with them a little bit. What do you think about that, Kalen?
Hmm. That's the first I've heard that. I kind of don't know what it means. With some of our players never understood what made them successful last year. Anybody have a take on that?
Yeah, Bruce's thing is always you have to win the big moments in the game, right? He's not really about midfield control. He's always been more about like the biggest moments are where games are won or lost. And he said almost this exact same thing after they were eliminated against NYCFC in the playoffs last year. So basically, we played a little bit over our heads. It's funny because I don't think Bruce gives a damn about statistics, but he's basically making the XG argument, right? Because like New England were like 15, 16 points better last year than XG had them at because Matt Turner was the best goalkeeper in the league. He won a lot of big moments. Tejan Buchanan was the best winger in the league. He won a lot of big moments. Carlos Heel was probably the best player or second best player in the league. He won a lot of big moments. Buxa, with the Europa League team now, got sold for $8 million. He won a lot of big moments. So I think what Bruce is really talking about is the ability to lock in and understand in the moment that this has got to be it. And this team, I mean, never did that.
Well, I'll just say it's not the same team like that. I just think it's not the same team. So you can say, yeah, we weren't able to win the big moments, but that's why you have players like Tejan Buchanan who finds that big moment, or Bo who finds Buxo who finds those big moments, like you know, you've Turner, right? Like how many moments did he find? So I think that if you take out your best striker, your best winger and your goalkeeper, from any team, tell me what's going to be left.
That's the thing, right? Like we've kind of learned that between the Revs and Colorado, like Colorado sold four guys basically in Vines, Bassett, Acosta and Trusty. And I would say didn't really go out and replace them. The Revs tried to, but they got that done too late. Like if they had Georgi Petrovic from day one this year, they would be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, if Dylan Barrero had come in from day one and stayed healthy. So it was a combination of it's a different team. They don't have those pieces that we both just listed. And then on top of that, they had bad luck, like really terrible luck with injuries. Gustavo Bo going down injured just as he was getting hot crushed them. Barrero going down injured, you know, just as he was like, he looked like he was the exact right signing to replace Tejan Buchanan. Then he got hurt. We've basically not seen him since then. Farrell was mostly healthy, but Kessler wasn't. And they, you know, he has not been the same this year. So like one thing piling on top of another, and it ended up being, like I wrote, one of the worst Shield defenses in history. It'll be right there with 2018 TFC, who at least made CCL finals, and 2000 DC United, who went from about 1.8 points per game to like 0.95 and worst in the Eastern Conference. Like that is not the company you want to keep. All that said, I think New England's going to be good next year. Maybe that's stupid, but I look at this, like they're not going to be hit by injuries like that again. They'll have Petrovic all year before selling him for $15 million somewhere. They're going to be a good team next year.
Yeah, I think Barrero's legit. Once he's able to be healthy and be there, I think that's a huge addition. I still like the fullbacks. I still think Polster has been an incredible signing for them. Mm-hmm. And they've shown the willingness to give him partners now. And I think a few of the options there are pretty good. To play that spot, and if Bo and Heel are healthy, I think they're going to be pretty special as well. With not even knowing what you're going to get from Veroni, which reminder, Buxa couldn't put one foot in front of the other for a little while when he first got here, and he ended up being an elite goal scorer in Major League Soccer. And when I see what Petrovic is, and I think what Barrera will be, there's a level of confidence in Bruce Arena and his staff that they are IDing players well. They did it with Gustavo Bo as well, They've hit. So I think you have to trust them. It's just, again, I think we've mentioned this on this show, of just there is no history of selling and being good. FC Dallas hasn't figured it out. Philly now has sort of figured it out, but this is a learning process for teams in MLS. I don't know that LAFC have figured it out in terms of losing Eddie Atuesta and what they've tried to continue on. Rossi as well.
Walker Zimmerman.
Yeah. I think everyone in MLS is sort of watching the Revs, and the plan still doesn't exist of what do you do. And you mentioned Petrovic from the beginning of the season. We thought the smart thing was, well, they'll have Turner half the year. Like, right. They lost Dejan, but at least they'll have Matt Turner. And that didn't work for them. He got hurt, the national team stuff, all of that. So there is no clear answer yet of how to continue to be good while selling young players.
Into CCL for next year. Right now, you have Vancouver, Canadian Championship, Orlando City, obviously Open Cup. Then you have LAFC for sure. They've locked it up, so they're going to go. You have the Supporters Shield winner. That'll be Philly or LAFC, unless Montreal does something crazy. So it looks like Vancouver, Orlando, Philly, LAFC, and then your 2022 MLS Cup champion. We'll also get into CCL.
FC Cincinnati, congratulations.
Here you go. Look, they're just getting this. That's what this week is about. Preparing Leagues Cup Showcase, Guadalajara, Nashville, too. They got Club America, I mean, RSL, if they can get there, Atlas in town, et cetera, et cetera. Some quick hits and we'll get out of here.
If Brandon Vasquez scores a hat trick against Chivas, do you think the bid comes in the next day?
Didn't the bid already come in?
Yeah, the bid came in for half a mil.
Yeah, depending on who you believe. There was some bartering, that was happening there.
Actually, Doyle, if he scores a hat trick for a friendly America, then the Chivas bid comes in during the game.
any thoughts on New York Derby? We joked about Nick Cushing having beers. Alexander Collins had an incredible match, scored like in the first minute, basically, with a header. And then Clears went off the line in the 11th. NYCFC 2-0 winners.
And I have Struber, two thoughts.
Struber built that one up a good bit, it seemed like, and then then the highlight for him was being a meme about how you drink water out of a water bottle.
Yeah, the coaches actually kind of stole the show between Struber's pregame guaranteeing a win, and then the not knowing how to drink water correctly, and then Cushing crushing beers at dugout afterwards. But no, the two things. First of all, if Collins had stayed healthy all year, I would have had him first in Defender of the Year.
Yeah, he's been amazing. He was leading that, yeah.
Yeah, he's been absolutely amazing. Getting him back down the stretch, playing this weird hybrid left center back, left back role, it has been interesting, and it's elevated this NYCFC team, who I'm not entirely convinced are back, but obviously had an incredible week between that and Atlas. And the second thing I'd take away for the Red Bulls, both goals they gave up were off recycled corner kicks. And I went through the second spectrum data. The Red Bulls are among the best teams in the league at defending set pieces. I think only Philly and Seattle have given up fewer goals directly off of set pieces, whether it's a direct free kick or a corner kick off of somebody's head or a short corner, you know, something within like one pass of a set piece. Like one of the three best teams in the league. Recycling set pieces, like as happened in this game, they're among the like seven or eight worst teams in the league. They're down with like San Jose and DC United. So whatever is happening there with you know, winning second balls and just like hoofing it upfield, which you would think like kicking it as hard as you can, as far as you can, is like part of how energy drink soccer works.
Guys, we've trained this. All right.
Right. You would think that like that they would be able to solve that. I think it was something like 11 of the 39 goals they've given up this year have come off recycled set pieces, which is crazy. And I did not realize that was a thing until this game.
All right, some more quick hits here. Orlando 4, Toronto FC 0. We have a tweet dated July 23rd, 2022 from one Andrew Wiebe. Quote, Toronto gonna be a problem, huh? Yeah, there were problems. Problems happened, unfortunately. Our 2222 Player of the Weekend presented by Body Armor. By the way, that drops on Tuesday at MLSsoccer.com. Twitter Spaces, Doyle and I will be doing our thing on our Twitter Spaces show. Instead of the power rankings, we're going to do 22 under 22. But our Player of the Weekend is John Duran for the Chicago Fire. Things did not end well for the Fire, but John Duran later on has shown a lot of really positive signs. So
a lot of the Chicago kids have, by the way, because when I put my list together, I had Gutierrez on my list, but talking to people around the league, not Chicago people, everyone had a different or at least one Chicago person on the list. So that's small level.
In addition to Solonina.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
And by the way, when Solonina goes, they've got another homegrown sitting behind him and Brady that is probably going to step right in from.
Which someone had on their list, by the way, that I talked to. They had Brady Scott on the top 25.
Wow. Wow. Vancouver 2, Seattle 1. We were going to have a long debate about whether this
Chris Brady?
Yeah, it is Chris Brady. Brady Scott is the Nashville.
There's too many Bradys.
Austin.
It's like GM's named Chris. Like how many goalkeepers in that like 20?
Doyle is frozen in the most ridiculous position right now. And during this show, one of you texted us someone imposing Doyle's face on Josh Wolf holding up the Columbus Crew, and I've been laughing about that for the last hour. I can barely
screenshot this now. Screenshot this for meme purposes, because this is a perfect, like, what the hell are they talking about meme that we could use. Vancouver beat Seattle. We can talk more about Seattle at a later date, but I just want to say that Vanni Sartini called the Vite goal a, quote, soccer orgasm, and that is the most Vanni Sartini thing that has ever happened. Sporting KC 4, Minnesota United 1. Reynoso is suspended for this one, and sort of what you would expect when Reynoso's out happened to the Loons. Without DeBossi, without Reynoso, they're missing arguably their two best players. Maybe not arguably, probably. They got smacked. Shout out to Kansas City. Shout out to Peter Vermees. We have sort of panned their foreign signings for a while now, but Eric Tomey and William Agata look legit. Look really, really legit. So, all right, that's it for us. We're going to call this one good. We have some more mail we'll get to on Thursday, but we've given you an hour, 25-minute show, and Andre says, quote, please wrap. So we're wrapping. We will see you on Wednesday, I guess, actually, for Club and Country, ahead of the U.S. friendly against Japan and Canada's friendly against Qatar. And then we'll be back the next week as well with more, including a D-Row interview on Monday that you should tune in for. So check the MLS YouTube page. Check out Doyle's frozen face. We're out of here. Adios. We'll be right back.